Hello, lovely humans of the interwebs, and welcome to episode 2 of Aggly Polite, hosted by me, Clementine Yost.
Quick shout out to all my Irish lady loves out there. You did it. You repealed the 8th.
Happy fucking Monday, guys. Let's get this show on the road with some pop culture. And who better to discuss than the queen of social media herself, Kimmy K, Kim Kardashian. I kind of wanted to say, like, she's a boxer, like, Kimmy K, Kim the Kid Kardashian, but I don't know if she'd like that, so we're just going to go with her name, which is Kim Kardashian West. There you go. Anyways, on Tuesday, May 15th, she Instagrammed, you guessed it, a selfie. But not just any selfie, this was a paid partnership with Flat Tummy Lollipops, a brand of appetite-suppressing lollies. Instagram removed and has since restored the pic due to the hashtag suck it, so phallic. This is all problematic for 3 reasons. 1, the diet industry as a whole plays on our insecurities by demanding we, as women, constantly strive to be smaller. The Good Place's Jamila Jamil at Jamila Jamil on Twitter tweeted, quote, no, fuck off, no, end quote. That while she admired Kim's branding capabilities, this appetite-suppressant lollipop, quote, makes me feel actual despair over what women are reduced to, end quote. Reduced is right. This echoes Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie that, quote, we teach girls to shrink themselves, to make themselves smaller, end quote. So, unsurprisingly, Chimamanda is right. We are constantly told that our bodies must be as small as possible, and failure to comply is met with fat shaming. This pressure to be smaller is simultaneously mirrored and actualized by the societal notion that women take up too much space or should take up as little space as possible. Space being defined as the area in which female bodies, cis, trans, and non-binary, move and exist in the world, be it political, business, social, linguistic, athletic, or entertainment-based. The gender disparity in terms of political space can be understood through the number of women in politics. Spoiler alert, there aren't many, and how they are treated once they enter politics. A Pew Research study by Abigail Geiger and Lauren Kent from March 2017 shows the number of female world leaders has grown, but is still at just 38%, or 56 of the 146 nations studied by the World Economic Forum in 2014 and 2016. If you think that's bad, Jane Dudman at The Guardian found only 23% of the world's politicians are women. At the 2017 G20 summit in Germany, 36 leaders were present, of which 4 were women. German Chancellor Angela Merkel, British Prime Minister Theresa May, Norwegian Prime Minister Erna Solberg, and head of the International Monetary Fund, Christine Lagarde. We need more women to run for office, and the only way that that can happen is if we stop teaching women to be quiet and take up as little space as possible. Remember what I asked you guys to do last week? I said, if you're feeling kind of shit, kind of down, kind of in a deficit of self-confidence, try to embody a mediocre white man and just bask in the entitlement that that affords you to the world. We need to teach women that they deserve to take up space, and we need more women representing women, because that's one of the main ways that little girls know that they can run for office is if they see someone like them holding an office. Moreover, when running for office, women are often questioned on the salience of issues like corporation tax, environmental protection, transportation, etc., over, quote, women's issues. Salience is like the importance of an issue to a politician, and women's issues are seen as those in relation to the private sphere. This continues the societal notion of separate spheres. This public-private dichotomy with public clearly ranked superior and women relegated to the private continues the definition of womanhood and femininity on the basis of domesticity. This enforces the idea that women are inherently less deserving of respect and less entitled to occupy space, especially political space. In terms of space in businesses and the entertainment industry and sport, it's simple. women are paid less. We are still not seen as humans of equal right to occupy the space we're in. In terms of linguistics, Helena Thompson at the Smithsonian says, quote, criticizing teenage girls for the ways they speak is nothing short of a time-honored tradition, end quote. This also goes for the nonstop volume policing that women endure. This especially is true for women of color. You've probably all heard the stereotype of the loud black woman. This is A, very racist, B, very sexist, and C, combine those both together, incredibly dehumanizing and awful. So, University of Helsinki linguists Terttu Navalian and Helena Ramolin-Brunberg, I probably just botched their names. Dear Finnish listeners, if there are any of you, I think there might be one or two from my horse SRNC competing days. Shout out to my Finnish friends. Please tell me if I fucked that up and how to pronounce Finnish names better, because Finland's great and I want to come visit you. But anyways, back to the fucking point. Helena and Terttu. I'm sorry again. Terttu and Helena. They studied 6,000 letters from 1417 to 1618, and in that 264 years, they found female letter writers changed the way they wrote faster than male letter writers, introducing new words and discarding old words like doth or maketh. Now, I remember back in sixth grade being told off for saying like, both for using it as a means of pausing, kind of like how the French go, and also for using it instead of said. Again, he was like, yeah, that's so unfair. But now people of all ages and genders say like. I noticed that at my old job. I noticed that everywhere I go, my dad says like. Everyone does it. So fuck off. Teenage girls for the fucking win. Now, the contention that is social space is best understood through the reactions of those hashtag not all men and men's rights activists who view feminism as aggressive by trying to subjugate men. Our insistence on equality and equal rights is seen as aggressive because it goes against the prescribed behavior for traditional womanhood as subservient and submissive to men. No longer accepting that our identity be solely in relation to men, we thus are breaking down some of the traditional identifiers for men themselves. Thus, those hashtag not all men feel like their identity, through a proprietary relationship to women, is being attacked and see us as aggressors. One way that women have been identified through their relationship to men is still seen in the traditional way of addressing envelopes. So, for example, Mr. and Mrs. Edward Smith, the wife is just seen as an extension of him. This is based on, you know, like back in the day when women weren't allowed to vote or own property, they only had rights in the law through their marriage to their husband. So this made sense. I mean, it made sense only because women weren't seen as actual human beings in their own right. And so the only way to have any participation in society was through marriage. But now that women are starting to mostly be seen as actual human beings, we're getting a lot of women who are keeping their maiden names. I was talking to my neighbor yesterday. She's from Tehran. And she was saying that Persian women keep their last name, that they're very proud of their family name. And I thought, that's great. But in America, you get a lot of guys who are so up in arms about the idea of a woman keeping her maiden name because they see that as like weird or like upsetting or threatening somehow. And how is it weird or upsetting or threatening? It's really not. But to them, it's taking away part of the way that they identify themselves as men, because part of their masculinity is tied to, like I said, this proprietary relationship with women, women as property. And so for them to think that a woman's not going to change her name, they're like, well, then who am I? It's all gross. Anyways, this twofold pressure to shrink, both in body and in societal presence, can be dangerously internalized by girls and boys as eating disorders. From the ages of 13 to 25, girls and boys are most at risk, with a median age of 18. I personally was 16 when I started to develop anorexia nervosa. Bulimia nervosa, on average, develops from 18 to 24, a bit later. Now, bringing it all back to the social medias, to Instagram. Over 50% of Instagram users fall into the 13 to 24 age bracket. So, to promote an appetite-suppressing lollipop, Kim Kardashian is likely unknowingly, but still, endangering her followers by suggesting a means for abiding by these societal pressures to be smaller and take up less space. Let's teach everyone, but especially the sweet angel baby children, that we are all equal human beings entitled to bodily autonomy. Be it sexual or just the right to move through the world, should be without being told that we're too fat, too loud, too slutty, or too much. And on that note, a little quick side note for some not required reading, because I'm not your fucking teacher, but if you want some feminist reading, obviously Rebecca Solnit, Men Explain Things to Me. It's where the portmanteau mansplain was invented. Also, there is a great book by Anne Helen Peterson called Too Fat, Too Slutty, Too Loud, The Rise and Reign of the Unruly Woman. It was one of NPR's best books of 2017, and it's amazing. She talks about lots of famous women, like, for example, Hillary Clinton, and how Hillary Clinton was shat on for being too loud, too shrill. If she was just a male politician, people would have been like, you're great. Or like Serena Williams, how she's amazing at the top of her fucking game, and yet people still need to come out of the fucking woodwork and be like, she doesn't look like a bikini model, she's too muscly or whatever, and it's like, she's an athlete, leave her the fuck alone, or shut up, get off your Twitter trolling high horse, you dickhead. If you ever want to feel like a smart person, just carry a pretty book, you'll get a good workout, get some Michelle Obama arms, tricep dipping along, and you'll also feel like a clever cookie, so take my advice, folks. And from that cheery chat ending in disordered eating, let's transition to my favorite topic, me, JK. But I am going to talk about my eating disorder, so you can feel free to skip ahead to the sexy talk, but know that I don't even know what I'll be talking about, because the sex part is the part that I do off the top of my head, so hold on to your hats, folks. It's gonna be a bumpy, nah, sexy ride. Back to my eating disorder. I want to give just a little piece of advice to anyone suffering from an ED or anything really, but especially bulimia or anorexia. Whatever happens, try to focus on resisting the urge to purge. As my friend Maeve told me in my third year of uni, it doesn't matter if you binge, just try not to purge. And try to eat a normal breakfast the next day. She knew me and knew I was most at risk of binging at night, and with my combo platter anorexia and bulimia, I would starve myself for a day or days, and then from hunger eat something and feel like such a failure, I'd take a laxative or make myself sick. On other occasions, I'd eat a whole thing of biscuits, 7 peaches, or a thing of rice cakes, or once a whole loaf of banana bread, and then purge. To be clear, I hated myself. In front of the mirror, I was at once too fat and too bony. But, taking Maeve's advice, I started small, tried not to purge, and forced myself to at least have a banana every morning. I even kept a MyFitnessPal food diary to ensure I hit enough calories. If you ever use one of those food diaries, be careful. For me, it was really handy at first because I was severely anorexic, and it was good for me to know how much I'd eaten in terms of calories, just to make sure that I would hit it, because it would say, you've not eaten enough. But then once I put on weight and got to a healthy size, I started to use it in part of my bulimic binge purge starvation self-flagellation thing. So if you ever use one of those apps, just be careful. However, once I mastered eating a banana every day, then it was as though every night, no matter how bad I got, there was always the promise of normalcy awaiting me in the morning. This eventually became the thought everything would be okay, and everything would and did turn out just fine. But for the disordered eater, plagued by all-or-nothing thinking and deep self-loathing, anything that could be construed as a mistake meant not only personal failure, but almost the end of days. To any of you struggling with an eating disorder, whether you outwardly admit it or not, I know recovery is daunting. Especially when insensitive cunts say things like, why don't you just stop obsessing about your body? As if it's some macabre light switch able to simply be flicked off. When faced with recovery in its entirety, peeking at it from within your pillow fort of denial, it seems too insurmountable to even try. One of my friend's dads, Tanyos, shout out to Tanyos, wisely told me, completely unaware of how much what he said would help me, "Clementine, I know you're a vegetarian, but how would you eat an elephant?" "I didn't know," he says, "one bite at a time." So, let your first bite of recovery be to focus on the urge to purge. I won't say don't do it, because don't statements are unhelpful. We all slip up on the road to recovery. But just try, emphasis on try, T-R-Y, not to purge, even if you think you have binged. Instead, do something soothing. May I recommend some sweet, sweet Emily Dickinson poetry? By stopping purging, you upend the cycle, disabling it from rolling on further, even if just for one day. This shows your brain new possibility and carves new neural pathways that unravel the all-or-nothing thinking. Not to get too rosy-tinted and hopeful, as I said, we all slip up. And it's important to remember that, but not to hold yourself to such a perfectionist standard where you have to be perfect in your recovery. So just be mindful of the fact that you probably will make mistakes on your way to getting better. It's the whole two-step forward, one-step back thing. Just keep that in mind. Don't be so hard on yourself. Treat yourself with love, which is much easier said than done. It's almost easier to love anyone than it is to love myself, but I'm trying. And you should try too. Eating disorders never truly go away, as sad as that is to say. I was doing great, but having to move back to California after my UK visa expired, and I got really bad again. I became the most depressed I've ever been. But 8 months on, and I truly feel so much better. Possibly even great. Great spelled G-R-8. Inspired by Avril Lavigne's use of the number 8 in a Skater Boy. I believe that was a controversial and risky choice, but it sure as shit paid off for this fan. Just gonna say it right now. But, I still have bad days. I still catch myself in the thought trap of all or nothing thinking. But as long as I'm taking bites, I am recovering, both literally and metaphorically. So, bite-sized pieces, y'all. Fun fact, from the ladies at Jezebel, I learned while at my most anorexic that there are between 1 and 25 calories, but on average 5 calories per serving of male ejaculation. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, little 21-year-old anorexic me googled, how many calories are in a load of cum? Because that's how anorexic I was. There you fucking go. Now it's time for sexy time. And I'll have you know, I wrote sexy time in orange glitter gel pen, scented orange. Because what's sexier than citrus? As someone whose name is Clementine, I say nothing. So if you're curious as a kumquat, shout out to Jeremy for that delightful invention. Get ready for some informative shit. And that in keeping with the citrus theme, curious as a kumquat, that both citrusy, like me, sounds kind of sexy, which is like when you tell someone achingly polite and you're like, it's hosted by a girl whose name is basically Tangerine and she kind of talks about sex. People might be like, young lady talking about sex. Fornication, the coitus. And then you hear me talk about it and you're like, that's actually not sexy at all. That's just very anatomical and truly awkward. Like a kumquat. So thank you, Jeremy, for curious as a kumquat, because it really encapsulates the vibe, nay, the soul of Achingly Polite, and I really appreciate it. So y'all can peek my painting on Instagram at Achingly Polite, where I painted some curious kumquats for young Jeremy Deegan. Also, I apologize for that whole little intro bits maybe sounding a bit different than the rest of this episode. That's because, like I said, I wrote that in glitter gel pen, and since it's 1:57 a.m., it's really dark except for the lights in my dining room, which are bright because I changed the light bulbs myself because I don't need no man. I am a handy woman. But anyways, the glitter pen is very hard to read, so I had to lean forward to actually read what I had written down, which, as I just said, was the word sexy time. So I was so prepared for that. Just the honor, really. I'd like to say honor. The honor of delivering sexy time to you guys, you achingly polite listeners. You guys are great. So I apologize for the leaning forward and the probable echoing or volume change that just happened to your ears. I'm sorry. In keeping with our eating theme, but transitioning into sexy time, let's get right into it with Vararophilia. Color just went by, dark in the night. Could it be the Batman? No, commonly shortened to VOR, V-O-R-E, Vararophilia, V-O-R-A-R-E-P-H-I-L-I-A. It is a fetish or kink in which people are sexually aroused by the thought of being eaten, eating another person, and watching others do this. Impossible to be acted out in reality, vararophiles express themselves in drawings and stories, lots of manga. From the Latin vorare, to devour or swallow, and ancient Greek philia, to love, vor is not to be mistaken for cannibalism, as the victims are alive and swallowed whole. Some vararophiles distinguish between soft vor and hard vor. Soft vor means the victim is swallowed whole and alive and may come out again, still alive. In hard vor, the victim is more realistically digested, which can include being chewed up, so it's kind of like cannibalism. Some link vararophilia to macrophilia, or a fetish or kink involving giants. Vararophilia can also incorporate themes from sexual cannibalism, microphilia, pregnancy fetishism, furry fetishism, unbirthing, or the desire to be swallowed whole by the vagina and return to the uterus, and BDSM. One way for someone who's into vararophilia to act out their fetish is to pretend like their partner is going to eat them and have their partner roll them up in a blanket like a human taquito, and then pretend like they're going to eat them. And for some vararophiles, that is very sexy. As Dan Savage says, to be good sex partners, we should all be good, giving, and game. Good at sex, giving of sex as in not a selfish twat, and reciprocate oral sex and other sex. If your partner does it to you, you should probably do it back to them. Also, game, to try what your partner is into, but within reason. You know, like if your partner says, hey, I'm into some bondage, then y'all should look, research it and plan it out, schedule a scene where you're gonna do some light bondage and just gently and slowly be a kind and accommodating sex partner. And if you don't try it, you won't know if you like it or not. Obviously, within reason includes not traumatizing yourself. If you're a victim of assault, and your partner is into rough play and that could be triggering for you, speak up and don't traumatize yourself and just make sure that sex is always enjoyable for both parties. But yeah, good giving and game. Thank you, Dan Savage. They abbreviate it to GGG over at the Savage Love Cast. All y'all and your sex partners should be GGG because that's the best way to be. Didn't mean to rhyme there, but I am a poet, so, you know, what do you expect? Now, there is one way to eat someone without it being vararophilia or cannibalism. I'm talking about eating pussy. That's right, cunnilingus. Sadly, it's estimated only 25% of heterosexual men go down on women.
Take DJ Khaled, for example, who doesn't go down on women, but expects women to go down on him. Because, quote, women need to praise their man, the king. This is all a real shame because I wanted nothing more than for DJ Khaled to go down on me. I sure as shit would not say another one. I would say, no thanks, pal. Just fuck off with your misogyny.
Many men say they don't like it or that it smells fishy down there. That's rude. Another great quip I've heard was, I don't want to put my mouth where another dick has been. Not only is this born from a sexist double standard, but it is thoroughly unoriginal, as upon Googling, I found its exact wording on many sites from Australian mommy blogs to hashtag not all men forums alike. This sexist double standard that having more sex makes one more of a man while women are taught to be sex objects and never want it for ourselves makes sex something that must be extracted from women under duress. Therefore, men are taught to prefer women with less sexual experience for sex with them is not only another notch in their belt, but the surmounting of a greater challenge. My first proper boyfriend once mansplained to me at 19 that while he was like a magical key able to open any lock, I was a broken lock easily opened by any key. What a gem of a boy he was. By his logic, I was a slut. Just as our assertion of our right to equal space in business, politics, society, etc. is criticized as aggressive when we're simply asking for the same treatment as men as human beings, when we try to get equality within sex, to pursue pleasure as men do, as sexual beings, we are shamed as sluts. And this is nothing more than a means to control us and protect the status quo under the patriarchy by keeping women in their place. Damned if we do, damned if we don't. Now a reading from the book of Fuckboys on Bumble. Dakota, age 33. So yesterday I came across this heartthrob on Bumble, and I swiped right because I just couldn't help but want me a piece of this misogynistic little shit. No, I swiped right so that I could drag him. So his bio says, mountain and desert aficionado, hyphen. You love to eat and travel, dot dot. Tell me more of your unique qualities, hyphen. Your Snapchat filter says, quote, I have the morning after pill in my purse somewhere, end quote. The little girl in my photos is my sister's niece. I'm not going to tell you what his Instagram is because he could then get mad at me for sending all of my crusaders out to avenge me. We matched, and I said, just curious if you actually think Snapchat filters are somehow indicative of sexual promiscuity. LOL, hopefully not. That would be silly. He said, kind of, dot, dot, dot. It's not, it's science. To which I replied, having the morning after pill in your purse would be nothing short of incredibly prepared. If men bore the burden of fertility, they would be championed for their use of birth control, not shamed for it. We shame women for embracing their bodies as autonomous sexual beings. A woman's worth has for so long been tied to purity and domesticity, while her body is hypersexualized for the male gaze. So, for a woman to take her sexuality into her own hands and have Plan B in her fucking bag or carry condoms, she is thwarting the status quo, which, as you are clearly demonstrating, is met with shaming from the patriarchy as a means to keep her in line. Schnapp. Quite proud of myself, and had a few friends message me from Instagram, because of course I put this as my story. Well, the story for at achingly polite. Friends slid into my DMs saying, things from well done, Clementine, to you sure showed him who's boss, and what a idiot. Dakota, I hope you learn eventually that being an ignorant sexist fuckboy is just, like, why? Like, it's just, I don't understand. Maybe this is how he's been taught and raised, but it's like, what do you gain from holding beliefs that others are innately less than you? I guess you get a sense of power and a sense of, I guess it's just power. And he must have so little to identify his self-worth with that his masculinity must be so fragile that he must put women down like this. But I use the dog Snapchat filter when I send Snapchats to Anna, Sophia, Disha, Camilla, Imogen, Krina, my brother, hey Jack, Anna, sometimes Nicholas. Who else do I bother with my snaps? Hannah, my mom. Yeah, y'all are the people I send Snapchats to, so y'all see me with the dog filter. And I don't have Plan B in my purse because I have an IUD in my uterus. So fucking suck it, Dakota. Plan B is cheaper to get than a fucking IUD, and a lot of people can't afford to get IUDs or implants or pay for birth control regularly, and a lot of people don't trust that men won't be pricks about condom use, and a lot of people, women, will be like, hey, let's use a condom, and then men do this fucking thing where they don't use a condom, or they say, oh, I can't get hard with a condom because it feels so different, whereas on Dan Savage's show Savage Lovecast, they have experts on who say that studies show that when condoms break, people don't feel a fucking difference and they keep going and don't realize a condom fucking broke. And if there's such a difference in sensation between having a condom on and not, then surely when a condom broke, people would be like, oh my God, overwhelmed with the sensation. Anyways, men are pricks about condom use. So I think for a woman to have Plan B in her purse is incredibly prepared, because no one wants to be saddled with a child that they don't want or have to deal with a pregnancy that they don't want. So this guy can go fuck off, like our boy Dakota. My ex-boyfriend, who went by the pseudonym Sam. Sure, he was Irish because, like, we were living in Ireland, but, like, he also, he'd say his name was Sam. Sure, it wasn't Sam, but that's the nickname he would say because, like, he didn't want, for some reason, when we were, like, ordering pizza or whatever, he'd be like, they'd be like, can I get your name? And he'd be like, Sam, why are you giving the name Sam? Just give Clementine. And he's like, no, I can't know. And then, like, instead of Clementine, he'd give Chloe or Courtney. It's like, why are you giving Chloe or Courtney? Or, like, Christine? I didn't understand for the life of me. Anyways, he went by the fucking pseudonym Sam. And he went to Trinity. And y'all of my friends know exactly who I'm talking about. Anyways, y'all know who I'm talking about. But I don't want this to be a podcast where I shit on my ex. Anyways, the shitty ex-boyfriend who said I was a slut. As someone who saw female honor and desirability in female inexperience and abstinence, to him, I was like a poor gatekeeper or a really shit goalie. Bringing it back to cunnilingus, he never went down on me because I was apparently gross. I know, hashtag not all men are that bad, but when it comes down to it, our bodies are still seen as simultaneously inherently more sexual and more vulgar than men's. Performing oral sex on a woman seems to merit a fucking gold star, while women are tacitly assumed to automatically perform fellatio. Follow at Awards for Good Boys on Instagram. You can go through my Instagram, which is, again, at Achingly Polite. This artist named Shelby draws these very simple cartoons. And she draws these, like, rosettes, like a horse show rosette, or like the kind of rosette you get at a science fair. And it's like, made you come once, or is very clever about other ways to say not all men, or
I can't find the answer to that on HomePod.
LOL, did y'all just hear Siri there trying to get me to, hey Siri, what do you think about feminism?
I really couldn't say.
Shitty fucking member of the patriarchy, little bitch. And yeah, basically, we're meant to be over the moon when a guy offers to lick us out, yet when we go to bed with a dude, it's almost guaranteed we'll have a penis in our mouth at one point or another. To be fair, studies show that men with small penises tend to be better about automatically reciprocating and initiating oral sex. Good job to the small willy boys. However, we are taught that our worth is determined by the manner and degree to which we are consumed by men. Yet, men are taught not only is it permissible to consume us, but that we need to be consumed. And by consumption, I don't mean eating, like eating us out. I mean, you guessed it, sexual objectification. If I may impart anything on you in this realm of cunnilingus and oral sex reciprocity, if you have a girlfriend or a female sex partner, treat her right, eat her right. That's all. So, radical idea. Let's just treat each other like human fucking beings. Okay? We just be nice to each other, treat other people as you would like to be treated. And yeah, just don't be a dick. It takes so much energy to be a nasty person. Just be nice. So thanks for listening. Please rate us 5 stars on iTunes. I don't have an Android phone and I've never used Spotify for podcasts, but if there's a way to rate me, give me all the ratings. And write a review. The funnier, the better. Especially if it's kind of inappropriate. If you're just like, not inappropriate, like sexual. This is not a Nicole Byers podcast. I do not want to be grossly hit on in the comments. But if you want to be like, curious as a kumquat quilting in quantum quadrangles. I don't know. I'd be like, sick. Look at that. Wow. You have alliterated my soul. And I am so grateful for this opportunity to read your comment and feel this light inside my being from your words. So thank you. But yes, rate me 5 stars, leaves me a review, because the 5 stars helps me like show up when people search for like comedy or lifestyle podcasts or sex, whatever. Yeah, so cool. But I will leave it there. Wait, no. Before I go, quick plant tip. It's been a bit gloomy lately in LA, and my pinstripe Calathea, or Calathea, as I mistakenly pronounce her every single time, her name is Daenerys. She is the Khaleesi of houseplants, and recently her soil has been extra damp. That's because it's gloomy outside, it's not as sunny, so they're not photosynthesizing as quickly, which means she's not going to be drinking water as fast. So when the weather's gloomy, don't water your plants as much as you would when it's sunny, because you don't want them to get root rot. Also, if your Calathea isn't saying hi to you, isn't raising her leaves in salutation to the sun, then give a gal a leaf wipe down. And don't overwater her. And yeah, just be nice to your plants. Treat them how you would want to be treated if you were a plant. So I guess what I'd like to leave you with today is, ladies, don't be afraid to take up space. Anyone out there dealing with an eating disorder, focus on trying not to purge. And for anyone engaged in sexual shenanigans with a female, go down on her. Yeah, that's about it. And what I would like you to think about until next episode is, can you draw a vulva? Without Googling vulvar anatomy, just try to draw a vulva and see if you can do it just off the top of your brain. And yeah, that's your challenge. And you can send me screenshots of your drawings in the DMs of @achinglypolite on Instagram or achinglypolite@gmail.com. I look forward to hearing from you. The next episode has a special guest from London. You guys are great. I love you all already. So stay curious, stay citrusy, fuck the patriarchy, and improve literacy. Goodbye.